This is the Big East Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, Saturday mornings can only mean one thing. That's right, it is time for the Big E Sports Show, Thanksgiving style and Thanksgiving edition. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience. You can join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, and you will want to check out PodcastArena.com. We have scored some big time guests this week, and you will want to go back and listen to each and every one of our interviews. Olympic swimmer Whitney Metzler will be joining us. She's going to kick off our program here in Hour 1. We're going to take time for some NBA news and notes that continue to recap the 2020 draft. Mitch Lawrence from SiriusXM NBA Radio will be joining us. And it is Week 12 of the NFL season. Can you believe it? Bob Glauber will be with us and Andy McNamara. We're going to take time for some fantasy football talk. Right now, let's visit with my producer, and that is Jack McCraw. Join him on Twitter at JackMC15. We've got a lot to talk about, but the first order of business is the Steelers and the Ravens. This game was moved from Thursday to Sunday due to COVID-19. And so in my mind, this is what I'm thinking about, Jack. I mean, should Big Ben win the MVP if he does carry the Steelers to a perfect 16-0 season?
MVP, no. I think he could have been in play for the Comeback Player of the Year award had it not been for Alex Smith returning not only to the Washington football team's roster, but now taking the job as their starting quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger has been good, not great. I think the Steelers have been really heavily reliant on their defense, and Big Ben has so many weapons around him, like Juju Smith-Schuster, Claypool, James Conner. It just seems that the Steelers are a perfect team, and that it's not just one star-driven player on that team.
What were your expectations leading up to the 2020 season with the Steelers? Were they one of your top four teams coming in?
No, I can't say that they were. I thought the Ravens were going to be there. The Chiefs were going to be there. I had a gut feeling that somehow Bill Belichick was going to come pull something out of thin air and make playoffs again. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little surprised that the Steelers are this good. And who knows? They could have a perfect season.
So who do you give credit to? I mean, why are they striding out this year? I mean, is it the defense or do we need to give all credit to Big Ben?
I got to say it's Mike Tomlin.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin has...
That's fair.
Mike Tomlin, in my opinion, is the second best coach in the league behind Bill Belichick. He knows how to rally his troops better than anyone else, and he put the Steelers on top of the mountain.
What a great way to kick off our program with some NFL news and notes with my producer, Jack McCraw. Right now, we're going to take a hard shift. Coming up next here in Hour 1 will be Whitney Metzler, Olympic swimmer, golf mom, and attorney. Much more coming your way on Sports... Happy holidays and welcome back to Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We love our audience and we love our listeners. Chime in at Twitter at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com, and twice is nice. Check out PodcastArena.com. My amazing producer, Jack, he posts all of our interviews. You can go back and listen to each and every one. Well, it is hard to believe. It is already week 13 of the NFL season, and right now we're going to focus our attention on the New England Patriots, and we are so delighted to have back with us. That is Jim McBride. He is the Patriots beat reporter and writer for the Boston Globe. Good morning, Jim. It's been a while since you've been on the program. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, everyone. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back on, and it's been a while since we've had you on and talking about the Patriots, but what were your takeaways on that win last week? How were they able to contain Kyler Murray and get a W against the Cardinals?
Yeah, you know, I think they've done what they've done to a lot of young quarterbacks, and that they mixed their coverages really well and disguised things and really didn't tip their hand to the last possible second. So, you know, guys that haven't seen the Patriots a lot, you know, I think Sam Darnold, you know, last year infamously said he was seeing ghosts out there. And I think Kyler Murray was having a similar experience on Sunday. You know, he was seeing things that he probably saw on tape, and you know, and then the Patriots would change it up at the last second, dropping into coverage, rushing guys when they looked like they were, you know, max protect. So it was kind of different to watch, seeing that Kyler's been on such a run this year. He's, you know, he's thrown a touchdown pass in every game, and not only were they able to prevent him from doing that, but they really maintained their edges and the gap integrity and didn't let him run it at all either. So kind of took both threats away, and you know, you saw the result. But still took a you know, a last-second field goal to beat them. But it was a pretty impressive win, probably the Patriots' best of the season.
It was, and it was an exciting game. So with that win against Arizona, I mean, what does that say to you? I mean, what do we learn? I mean, do the Patriots, can they still move forward with Cam Newton and ultimately build around him?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, I think this is a big week for them. You know, they have a game, a double dip in Los Angeles, game Sunday against the Chargers, and then they turn around and play again on Thursday night against the Rams. And, you know, I think that, you know, they've been kind of written off by a lot of people, and probably deservedly so at 5-6. But if they somehow win these two games, and I think to win them both would have to be kind of ugly defensive battles. You're not going to hang with both those offenses for 60 minutes with what the Patriots have right now. But if they somehow manage to win both those games and they head back to Boston at 7-6, you know, I think people will start to think, you know, differently about this team.
Hey, glad you're with us in Hour 1 at SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host. If you're just joining us, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We're going one-on-one with Jim McBride, the Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. You bet we're talking about Cam Newton. And so, in your mind, what does he need to show you that he can be the quarterback of the future and change that narrative? Because, I mean, come on, let's be honest, Jim. I mean, there has been a lot of question marks. There's been a lot of fodder, a lot of talk.
Yeah, I think consistency is the thing that's been lacking with Cam this year. You know, 2 weeks ago, he threw for 350 yards in the loss to the Texans. And then last week, he didn't crack 100 yards. So I think, you know, he's got to kind of develop that consistency and also be able to look to his secondary receivers. He's been kind of, you know, locking on his main guy and just kind of looking in his direction and not really going through his progressions. And, you know, defenses pick up on that really quickly. His head is kind of locked into the guy that he's looking at, and he's trying to force some throws. And, you know, that's led to a lot of turnovers. And, you know, really, in Sunday's game, he kind of did the same thing on late in the game. And if not for a missed field goal, that game could have been much different. But I think if they can keep ingratiating him to the offense, you know, he hasn't, you know, this is such a complicated offense that Brady ran for 20 years, but mm-hmm. It took him a while to master it. So to expect someone to come in, even someone of Newton's pedigree, who, you know, former MVP of this league, to expect him to come in and pick up Josh McDaniels' offense in 1 year, probably a little, you know, little high. That's like coming into a rookie coming in. So I think if they want to stick with him, I think he will get better. They're going to have to surround him with some more weapons. But, you know, I think that the way he's come in and really, you know, taken over this locker room and become, kind of the face of the franchise, I think they would love to see that.
You know, speaking of getting better, how is Cam? I mean, health-wise, he had an abdomen injury earlier this week. They got the big game tomorrow. I mean, where's he at this point?
Yeah, you know, talking to Coach Belichick this week, it didn't sound like it was any kind of danger. He didn't miss any practice time. We're not sure if he suffered that injury on the late hit that kind of led to the winning field goal on Sunday. He did take his time getting up from that injury, but, you know, he was able to play the last three plays. And, you know, being limited at practice, you know, we'll see. I think that observing him at practice this week, he didn't look like he was hampered at all. We don't have a huge window at practice during the season, but, you know, Cam was the same, you know, vivacious self. He was out there doing a little dancing. He was yelling at his teammates in a positive way. So I fully expect him to play tomorrow.
Okay, so what do you think about the Chargers? From what I understand, they're favored against New England. Does that surprise you, Jim?
Not a lot, just because of the Patriots' struggles on the road this year, you know, and the uncertainty of Cam and several other players. You know, they're still missing their top receiver in Julian Edelman. You know, he looked like he was turning the corner from his knee injury, and then he got placed on the COVID list. So, last I saw, I think it was a 1 or 2 point game. So I'm not too surprised. I think they say, you know, in the NFL, 3 points for the home team. So I think that most people see this kind of as a pick 'em game, and that's probably deservedly so.
Hey, we're winding down our time. Jim McBride, Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. You got to check him out online, is with us at SportsMap Radio Network. Okay, so let's shift gears. Talk to me about Tom Brady. I mean, from afar, what has this season shown us so far, and why is he struggling to win in Tampa?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's kind of a butting heads of big personalities down there in Tampa, whether it's Bruce versus Tom, I'm not sure. I think that, you know, Tom is so used to having a support system in place that kind of supports what he likes to do and picks out the plays that he likes. And, you know, this offense doesn't seem to fit his skill set. I mean, you've got some great deep receivers in Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, you know, even Antonio Brown. And Tom just, you know, the long ball is just not in his repertoire the last few years, especially in New England. And that's why New England's offense was really horizontal more than vertical the last, you know, decade or so, because Tom was so good at getting the ball out quickly and hitting those guys underneath and letting them, you know, move the chains. And to think that this guy was all of a sudden at 43 going to become this long-range bomber, I think that's kind of, you know, fool's gold. You know, he's going to hit one once in a while, but yeah, you've got to start getting that underneath stuff. And until Bruce Arians, you know, kind of recognizes that fact that the no risk it, no biscuit offense isn't the Brady offense, they're going to struggle.
Mm-hmm. Hey, getting you ready for the Chargers and the Patriots. Our very special guest to kick off hour one of the Big E Sports Show has been Jim McBride, Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. Check him out online. Jim, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to another conversation.
Thanks. Take care.
You bet. Stick around. Coming up next is Michael Hawley, NBC Sports Boston. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour one, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Many different ways to connect. Always live on Twitter, at eRadioSports, info at eRadioSports.com and podcastarena.com. Hey, are your wiper blades, are they chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. The professional parts people will help you find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will install your wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Well, listen, we are always ready to talk some NBA, and this time we're going to take time for a book review with New York Times bestselling author. He's from NBC Sports in Boston, and that is Michael Hawley. He has just released his latest book that shares the inside story of Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and the rebirth of the Boston Celtics. We're going to talk about that dominant championship run and the big three cementing the Celtics as one of the greatest teams in NBA history. It is always such an honor to have him on our program. Welcome back, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning. And you know, any opportunity I have to come on the Big E Show with you, Alyssa, is fantastic. I can't turn down that opportunity. it's great to hear your voice. Great to catch up with you again.
Oh, it's always such an honor, as I just mentioned. And listen, congratulations on your latest release. I'm super excited for all of our listeners to hear about it. But actually, let's start off our conversation and have you weigh in on some of the latest with the Celtics. Draft night has come and gone. What were some of your takeaways, and what were some of those needs that needed to be addressed?
You know, it's a good question. I think, you know, sometimes when you watch a draft and you say, okay, what are they thinking here? And then a couple of days after the draft, you get the answer. So I'll start at the back of the draft first. Late in the with their second of their three first-round picks, they picked up a point guard, Peyton Pritchard. I said, okay, all right, how many point guards are you going to have on the roster? You already signed Jeff Teague as a backup, and now you got Pritchard, and you had this kid, Tremont Waters, from last year. How many point guards do you need? And then we find out the news that Kemba Walker is going to miss the beginning of the season, and so that explains that. They were just trying to protect themselves for that Kemba Walker injury. So they did that, and they got a shooter. I mean, Big E, they really – struggle with bench scoring. And they got a kid from Vanderbilt, Aaron Naismith, who a lot of people rated as the best shooter in the draft. And we'll see if that translates to the pros, but he was having a terrific sophomore season at Vanderbilt before he got hurt. So I feel like they did address two big needs. They did need a good backup point guard, and they needed shooting.
Okay, so the Celtics, as you're talking about, they needed shooters that can light it up. I mean, can these guys come in and make an immediate difference? I mean, you got to have depth, but what kind of numbers can they post, do you think?
Well, that's the question. That's the big one. And you think, you know what the goal is? Now, when you're drafting, where the Celtics were, their first round pick was at number 14. when you're drafting around there, there's always a possibility that you can get a start. You can get a start anywhere in a draft. I mean, history bears that out. But if you're going to play the averages and you're right in the middle of the draft, what you're hoping for now, here's the new standard. After everybody watched the NBA Finals and saw the 13th overall pick, Tyler Hero, just really have some great moments, not only in the NBA Finals, but in the Eastern Conference Finals as well. You're saying, okay, can we get a guy, a rookie, who can come in, we can live with the ups and downs, but that as a rookie who can just come in and give us scoring. That we're not going to ask him to do anything else. We're not going to overwhelm him with assignments. Just come in and score for us. That's the hope. It seems like, I'm saying very cautiously, seems like Aaron Naismith is that guy, but you never know.
Hey, NBC Sports Boston, Michael Hawley. He is a New York Times best-selling author. Also, he's a professor at Boston University. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Michael S. Hawley. You bet. We're going to be talking about his book here in just a moment. One more quick hit, talking about the Celtics. I mean, did you agree with trading pick number 30 for two future picks and selections? I mean, Danny Ainge, he said he did not want to have four rookies. I mean, do you think that's about the right number? Did you agree or disagree?
No, I agree with it. I mean, they were at the point on their roster where, you know, at some point you have too many guaranteed people there. And so you have to make a decision. And if you don't see somebody that you're in love with at that spot, it's probably best just to kick it down the road or, you know, get some future picks. Now, I say that. That makes sense. I can understand what Danny Ainge was thinking. But doesn't everybody think, like, hey, you know, there's always a chance. We all have that thought in the back of our mind. And before the draft started, I looked at the draft, and I came up with this list. See, if I had known I was going to come up say this to you, I would have had the list right in front of me. But I came up with this list of players who were drafted way outside of the lottery. I think my standard was 16 and below. So I came up with a list of players since 2000 who were drafted 16 or below. And so, lucky you, I just found it.
Okay, good deal, okay.
And some of the names are incredible. I came up with a starting five and a sixth man, just from this list of players who were in the low end of the draft, so to speak. My starting point guard was Tony Parker. My two guard was Jimmy Butler. My small forward, Kawhi Leonard. Power forward, Giannis. Center, Jokic. And my sixth man, just because he always wins the sixth man award, is Lou Williams.
I mean,
I mapped out a lot of really, really good players. Drew Holiday, I left out. Eric Bledsoe, I left out of there. Rajon Rondo, Trevor Ariza. I mean, the point, Marc Gasol, there are a lot of players that you can get at the end of the draft. So when teams just say, okay, we're in the 30s, we're in the 40s, forget about it. I get it, but there's still good players throughout the draft.
Hey, it is an NBA segment with Michael Hawley. Glad you're with us at Sports Map Radio Network. Okay, listen, we are running out of time. We got to transition and highlight your brand new book. It is titled The Big Three, the new book that tells the inside story of Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and the rebirth of the Boston Celtics. So we were talking off air. I mean, Michael, you've been on my program many times, but it's always been talking about the Patriots. So why did you wait so long to do an NBA book? You've got so much in you.
Well, I didn't wait that long on purpose. And you know, and we've talked off the air, and you know how I lean on my faith in these situations. So, you know, that door closed. The door closed when I initially decided to do the book. It was in 2012.
Wow.
And I had great access to the Celtics. I was on the team plane. I was on team buses. I was in practices. I had a lot of good stuff, but it was a different kind of book that I envisioned at that time. And it was a book about a team that was trying to capture one more championship run before it all dissolved. And after that season was over, and it was not a great season for the Celtics, I was just, something didn't feel right. I said, no, this is not the book. And I wrote other books in between that experience of doing that research. And then finally, And, you know, some people will understand this, some people won't. I know you will. But finally, through prayer, it became clear that what I needed to do was something completely different, and it was a Big Three book. So I needed the hindsight to understand the book that it was. I was actually too early. That's the point. I was too early.
Right.
2012 was not the time to write that book. I'm glad I didn't. You know, sometimes that door closes, and we feel like we failed. We feel bad. Like, oh, it didn't happen the way I thought it should happen. What did I do wrong? It didn't do anything wrong. It just wasn't the time. And so the time to do it was 2018, 2019. Now it's out in 2020.
Okay, so there is a lot of NBA books out there. A lot's been written and chronicled about the Boston Celtics. What makes yours different? What makes yours unique, Michael?
Oh, well, it's just the organization itself. The way this Celtics version, because, you know, the Celtics, all the 17 championships, a lot of history there. But this version, this slice of Celtics history, I focus on 10 or 11 years and how the organization changed in those 10 to 11 years. But before Danny Ainge got there, he was doing TV, and the owners of the Celtics asked him to take over basketball operations. He initially turned it down. See, like, you just gave me an idea. Listen, this is, I'm talking about basketball, but I hope somebody in your audience can hear how these things work out. Listen to this. This is actually true. It sounds made up, but it's true.
Okay.
Danny Ainge was asked to take over basketball operations. He initially said no. Then he came back and he changed his mind, and he took the second invitation that Celtics ownership gave him. Danny Ainge then asked Doc Rivers to be the coach. Doc Rivers initially said no.
Oh, my gosh.
But after the second time, he said, sure, I'll do it. When Doc Rivers left, Danny asked Brad Stevens to coach the Celtics. Brad Stevens initially said no.
Uh-huh.
You can't make this up. You can't make it up. And then after a consul with his wife, who's a lawyer, and she said to him something so beautiful, she said, The thing that stands out to me, she said, Alyssa, she said, you will never reach your potential unless you're uncomfortable.
That's right.
She said, you'll never reach your potential being comfortable. You got to be uncomfortable to reach your potential.
You've got to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
And so,
right. Yeah.
That's right. And he was at Butler. He had a lifetime contract at Butler. They loved him. He was very comfortable on that campus. They had gone to the national championship game twice at Butler. That's unheard of. But his wife convinced him, hey, stretch a little bit. And if it doesn't work out, all right, you tried it. You went to the NBA. It's a great experience. You'll learn from it. You'll be a better person. But you'll never be great, truly great, unless you push yourself a little bit. So, I mean, there are stories like that throughout the book. And, of course, the culmination of the 2008 championship. But I really enjoyed the experience of putting it together because I just learned a lot about not only about basketball, but business and the evolution of the NBA altogether.
You know, we are up against the clock. We definitely are going to extend this invitation again real soon. I can't wait to get the book in my hands, and we will take a deeper dive. There's so much more that I want to get into, but we want to have you on the show during this week. It's obviously really big with the release of the book, and just extend our congratulations. You're an amazing writer and so inspiring to listen to. That's some great advice, too. That's some sage advice you just shared, so I can pass that on to my sons, okay?
That's right, and you know, and congratulations to you. I mean, you've done a great job. You got a college athlete there. I mean, look at that. But I always enjoy talking with you. That's sincere. I love coming on with you, and all the best to you. And I look forward to chatting with you again. We can do it soon. We don't have to wait until another book comes out. We can do it sometime in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. Let's mark it down. Listen, that's been Michael Hawley, NBC Sports, Boston, New York Times bestselling author. Go out and get a copy of his book anywhere online. The Big Three, the new book that tells the inside story of Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and the rebirth of the Boston Celtics. We will be right back at Sports Map Radio Network.
is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday morning. SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much, as always, for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. Many different ways to connect. Always live on Twitter at eRadio Sports. Info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. And you know what? Winter is here, and if your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Don't take a risk on a dead battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts provides free battery testing. If your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people can find the exact battery that fits your car or truck with free installation. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, we are all looking to finish 2020 on a high note, always ready to talk some PGA news and notes. It is round three of the Mayakoba Golf Classic. It is underway. And the highest ranked player in the field this week, of course, is Justin Thomas. He is ranked third in the world. So we are so excited to continue this conversation with our next guest, and that is former PGA Tour player, the great Larry Miller. Happy weekend, Larry. How are you?
Yeah, happy weekend. Great. Doing great. It was a nice Thanksgiving, and now we're in that in-between time, ready for Christmas, and everybody's going to get new clubs and stuff for Christmas.
I sure hope so. Hey, let's talk about this big tournament that is underway. As I mentioned, several players we're going to be keeping our eye on. One, of course, which is Justin Thomas. But we can't overlook, how about Abraham Anser, who has had a nice history at the Mayakoba Golf Classic. This could be a very special week for who? I mean, who are you keeping your eye on, Larry?
Well, those two names. you hit the jackpot there with those two. They've got to be two of the heavy favorites, especially JT, without Dustin in the field. You know, Dustin Johnson was going to play, and he decided that his body really needed a rest. And he said, in fact, it was interesting. He said, my body and my mind need a rest. So it kind of shows you how he was grinding there at Augusta in play. You know, he was really dialed in. And, you know, it's wearing on you. The big time tournament golf, is very mentally draining, cause you have to literally focus for 5+ hours, you know, without missing a beat. I mean, you lose the focus for just a minute and you can lose the tournament. So it's pretty draining. And then, of course, you get physically, you know, tired when you get mentally tired. And so he needed a rest. But him being away, boy, that opens the door for JT. I think that he certainly has to be the odds-on favorite to win this tournament down there. But Abraham Anser, as you said, has a great history there. He's got, he's going to feel comfortable. And he's been playing really well for over a year. And so I expect him to be in the mix also. I've played that golf course, and it sets up well for both of those guys. It's an approach shot golf course. The driving there is not that tight. I would expect the guys who are good iron players and good wedge players to perform really well in that course.
Well, I was going to ask you, Larry, I mean, what adjustments will the competitors have had to make because of what you have altitude there and then the crosswinds? I mean, you've got to make sure that you're very measured and you have the right club in your hand, and it all starts on the tee box.
Yeah, and the ball goes a lot. It really does go significantly farther down there. I know when I first went down there and played, it was quite quite stunning. You know, I mean, I was hitting 9 irons 15 to 20 yards farther than I usually do. And so you really have to account for that. And during the practice round, you have to kind of get that dialed in. And it's hard. It's hard to do that when all year you're hitting a club a certain distance, and then you've got to add, 10, 15% to it. It takes some calculating. But that's what these guys are good at. They're good at adjusting from week to week, different greens, different terrains and types of grass and hills, no hills, and, mountains and oceans. And these guys are so good, they can adjust on the fly. And I don't think they have any trouble with that.
We are Inside the Ropes with former PGA Tour player. That is Larry Miller. So glad you're with us at SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. You bet we're talking about the Mayakoba Golf Classic, Round 3. It is underway, and leading into this tournament, the heavy favorite, Justin Thomas. And let's take a deeper dive about just how his season has played out so far. I mean, he was saying he was 4 to 5 rounds from a historic year, and that it is very doable in his mind that he could have potentially 10 to 11 wins in a season. I mean, what say you? I mean, do you think this is possible? And perhaps why hasn't he closed out more tournaments?
For him, it is very possible, as good as he is, but he's developed now this trend and this history of not closing out tournaments. And, you know, after a while, it's kind of like Ricky Fowler, you know, with the majors. And it gets in your head and you start wondering. You know, you get near the end of the tournament and you're waiting for, it's almost like you're waiting for something bad to happen, because it always does. And he's going to have to overcome that, you know, mentally. The thing that would really help him would be to come down the stretch and come from behind on the last few holes and make a couple of birdies and win. If he would do that, it would give him a feeling of being able to close out a tournament and put on a little charge at the end. And I think that's one way that he's going to be able to overcome that. And I expect that to happen, because he's such a good ball striker and such a great wedge player. You know, he hits it so far. He's like Dustin. He's got wedges all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great wedge player. That's one reason where, you know, he's got that world ranking that he does. And I expect him, yes, but as far as winning, well, Tiger did it as far as winning 8, 9, 10 tournaments in one season. Tiger did it, but Tiger did it when he didn't have that many people to beat, so to speak. And as we know nowadays on the tour, you've got 20, 30, 40 people every week that can easily win a golf tournament. So it's not as easy to string them out and win multiple tournaments like it used to be. But he is capable, and so is Dustin Johnson. And somebody can get hot and keep it going for a while and do that.
Well, JT certainly does hope to change that narrative going forward. We have discussed this before on our program, and I think it's worthwhile to revisit. But, I mean, what do you think is the key when you're coming down this stretch and you're playing with the lead? How do you close out a tournament?
You have to stay aggressive. The minute that you start being conservative and if maybe protecting a 1 or 2 shot lead, that invites disaster. Inevitably, when you get conservative near the end, somebody behind you is playing very aggressively and trying to catch you, and that's how you win golf tournaments, by being aggressive at the end. You know, I can tell you from the times that I've won events, I learned that early on. I made the mistake of trying to protect a lead a couple of times, and then you start figuring it out. You say, you know what, to win, you got to go get it. And so coming down there, you gotta take some chances and go for it, because there's too many guys that can catch you these days. So that's how you do it, is by staying aggressive right through the finish.
You're listening to Voice, former PGA Tour player Larry Miller, author of 4 books on golf and performance. And, you know, I have to wonder, what do you think, Larry, is the most challenging part of being on the PGA Tour? Is it the physical or is it the mental component?
Well, the first thing you have to overcome and get used to is the travel, the constant travel. In fact, your first year that you play, you've played a lot of golf courses you've never played before. So you're not familiar with the courses. You're traveling every week. You're sleeping in a different bed. You have different food, different water. And it really does take some adjusting. Of course, now the college players play so many tournaments and events that they are sort of pretty seasoned by the time they get to the tour. But it's still a period of adjustment. And then, of course, you have to get used to the fact that you're playing against, it's like the NFL. The NFL is a bunch of college all-stars. You know, they're all great college players. Well, when you get to the PGA Tour, they're all great golfers. And so you're stepping up a level in class. And so you have to, and that's one more reason to be aggressive, the thing we were talking about a minute ago. These days, you have to be aggressive with your golf all the time, because there's just too much competition. But no, there is definitely a period of adjustment that you have to get used to. And that's why a good caddy is really important to kind of help you along and ease the way.
You know, I have to wonder just so many of the mental challenges that the players have had to deal with here in 2020. I mean, it's been a unique, it's been an unusual year. And you're talking about being an athlete. I mean, you're a creature of habit. We like, you know, a certain routine, and it's not the same when you're traveling all the time. So that rookie year on the PGA Tour, what was that like for you? I mean, did you experience a lot of frustration, or did it go better than expected?
Well, you know, my very first year, this is back a ways, I drove from tournament to tournament. And I was
able
to fly after that first year. But,
okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a nightmare driving that first year because, you know, if you'd missed the cut on Friday, you had to hustle to the next city for Monday qualifying. And then, you know, and then if you missed the Monday qualifying, well, now you've got, you know, you've got a week to practice before the next one. I mean, it can get pretty, you know, pretty boring. when you have no tournament to play in for 6 days. So that was hard. Now, once you can fly, that makes it a bit easier, not to mention the fact that driving all over the country wears you out physically, too. So that was definitely also, you know, something to adjust to.
The Mayakoba Golf Classic, it is underway. We're talking about it with Larry Miller, former PGA Tour player. Okay, so we've talked about JT. We've talked about Justin Johnson, who does have the weekend off. But let's highlight Abe Anser. I mean, what do you think has been the key to just an incredible year here in 2020?
Well, he's just a great ball striker.
That's right.
Tee to green. You know, he's got just a wonderful golf swing. I love the way he plays the game. He looks to me like he plays the game with a lot of freedom. You know, there's not a lot of any evidence of any tension in his swing and his game, and he plays with confidence and freedom. And I think that's one reason he's had such good success here early on. But he's just a great ball striker. I mean, tee to green, if his putter's on, he's going to be really definitely in the mix, heavily into the mix there in this tournament. And I think he knows that course really well, too. That's one more reason why, you know, he and JT, I think, I'd be real surprised if one or both are not in contention coming down the stretch in this.
Well, it would be really cool for a win in his home country and a flourishing finish to the end of the 2020 year. Of course, when we're talking about Abraham Anser, I mean, you just think about his journey. I mean, his first year in college, he went to Odessa Junior College, and then it was head coach Ryan Hipple that recognized he was a very special talent and brought him over to Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, he had good, he really had good training there. Getting ready, and Ryan Hipple seems to be turning out a lot of great players, and I think there might be another one coming along too on that team. I think you might know him.
Hey.
His name is Stephen Campbell.
That's right. We got to be patient.
But no,
with
Ryan Hipple does a great job.
He does.
Ryan does a great job developing these young players, and that's why Oklahoma, you know, is one of the top ranked teams in the country.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's go back inside the ropes with Larry Miller. Hey, just another quick question talking about Dustin Johnson. I mean, he opted out to not play in the Mayakoba, and he was talking about, you know, physically he wasn't ready, but also mentally. I mean, how much time should you be taking off, and how many tournaments would you, I mean, typically schedule per month, Larry?
Well, you know, probably the greatest two players in the history of the game, arguably, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, they famously would never play more than two tournaments in a row. And because they knew the toll that it takes mentally and physically to keep playing tournaments one after the other. Now given that, you know, the training these days, the nutrition and the training gets them a little bit more prepared to play more than two events. Some guys play, you know, almost every week, but you couldn't do that back a few years ago. But I think after playing two tournaments, especially if you're in contention, because that's when it really wears on you, is when you're in contention and the pressure coming down the end. If you're missing the cut or, you know, barely making the cut, there's not that much pressure, and so it doesn't wear you out as much. But I think if you're one of the top players, more than 2 weeks starts wearing on you, and it might throw you into a tailspin where you have a slump for a while. So you got to be careful. Got to be careful with that and keep yourself fresh.
Mm-hmm. So what about junior golf? I mean, give some advice out there, because sometimes I get conflicting feedback. I like to, you know, maybe one or two tournaments a month, and then I hear, you know, some folks saying, oh, no, he's hot. Keep him playing. And I'm not so necessarily sure, because I think mentally it is just as draining as it is physical.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. When you're concentrating that hard for that long, it wears on you. Physically, it absolutely does. I mean, I can remember, you know, a couple of times, you know, in contention or winning a tournament.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely exhausted by the time I got finished. You don't feel it when you're in the mix because the adrenaline's going. But boy, when you get finished, it's like you hit a wall and you need to go sit down and have an alcohol, you know, beverage.
Larry, you and those adult beverages. Well, listen, we got to wrap up our time. Our very special guest who joins us each and every week always provides some amazing insight and perspective, not only on the PGA Tour, but also for all of us junior golfers and for the parents out there. Larry Miller has been with us at Sports Map Radio Network. Thank you so much, Larry. You and Connie have a wonderful weekend. We look forward to another conversation next
great.
Week.
Great. Yeah, everybody, let's put your order in for those new clubs for Christmas, everybody.
Thanks.